a minor who is forbidden to drink alcohol, to stay out past a certain hour, or to get her ears pierced without a parental consent is certainly not prepared to make a life-altering, hazardous, and potentially fatal decision, such as an abortion, without the consultation or the consent of at least one parent.
That's Ileana Ross-Layton, and she's the House Republican from Florida. During the debate over the parental interstate abortion notification bill that passed the House yesterday, we're going to spend the next few minutes of Issues Etc. with Doug Johnson of National Right to Life, where he serves as legislative director, talking about the bill and what its prospects are. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can email us here in the studio as well, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Doug, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's good to be with you, Todd.
First of all, tell us about the bill, what it exactly it does stipulate, and how healthy was the passage in the House yesterday?
Well, we had a real good vote in the House, as we have in the past, on this issue. The problem, the bottleneck, has been in the Senate. The issue is whether a parent ought to be notified or have the opportunity to give consent, as more than half the states have provided in their state laws, before an abortion is performed on a minor daughter. Regrettably, there is a lot of evidence accumulated over years from different parts of the country that these laws, although they are in effect in more than half the states, are often circumvented by minors crossing state lines, often being enticed to do so by advertising from abortion clinics in the neighboring states that don't have parental notification requirements, which actually use this as a selling point. You can go, for example, to a state like Missouri, which has a parental consent law in effect, and pick up Yellow Pages, and quite likely you will see ads, display ads in the Yellow Pages from abortion clinics in Illinois, in this case, where they do not have a parental involvement law. These ads, quite typically, in many parts of the country, say, no parental notification required here. Come on over here. So it's actually used as a selling point. Congress has to deal with that, and this federal bill would guarantee or try to protect at least a minimal level of parental rights in cases in which a minor does cross state lines. It would require the abortion provider, in most cases, to notify a parent back in the home state before he proceeds with an abortion.
Now, am I right? This is the second time we've seen this bill in a slightly different form go through the House, and I think even through the Senate. What's going on here? Why round and round the merry-go-round on this thing?
Well, about 80% of the public supports the concept that of laws that require a parent to at least to be notified or even give consent before an abortion can be performed on a minor daughter. And even the Supreme Court has gone along with this, although the Supreme Court also requires that there be the option in most cases of a minor going to a state court to get the notification waived. So 80% of the public supports the concept. It's repugnant to the abortion industry and to the radical pro-abortion interest groups, and so we have a tough time in Congress. The House, as you say, has passed this twice now by big margins. Last year they passed it with 270 votes, and it was about the same yesterday with a little bit different absentees is all. But in the Senate it's been much tougher. The Senate finally approved a narrower version of the bill in July of this year with 65 votes, which is a pretty good vote. But the Senate Democratic leadership then immediately erected some very unusual procedural obstacles to prevent the convening of a conference committee. And, of course, usually when the House and Senate pass different bills dealing with the same subject, two different versions, there's supposed to be a conference committee then to see if they can come to an agreement on a final version. That did not happen in this case, because the Senate Democrats, although in the minority, were able to prevent that from happening. So what happened yesterday is that the House just kicked the ball back into their court. They took up the Senate bill. They amended it to include the most important provisions, all of the key provisions of both the House and Senate bills, and sent it back again. And so it's now again pending before the Senate, Todd, but there's only a few days remaining before Congress recesses. And so we are hoping to see a vote in the Senate on this language in the days just ahead.
I'd like your reaction to a couple of things that were said today in reaction to the passage of the Child Interstate Abortion Notification Bill. This first one comes from Congressman Gerald Nadler, who's a House Democrat from New York.
Not since the enactment of the Fugitive Slave Act in 1852 Have we used, in 1850, have we used the power of the federal government to enforce the laws of one state on the territory of another?
Your reaction to this, he seems to be saying that this has been a judicial mistake.
Well,
a legislative mistake, I'm sorry.
I don't agree at all with Congressman Nadler's assessment, and neither do most of the lawmakers, or you wouldn't have the bill passing by these almost 2-to-1 margins in the House and Senate. There are, in fact, a lot of areas in which Congress, in effect, stands behind state laws and tries to curb activities that are intended to evade state laws. I don't think we have time probably to go into an extended discussion of this, but, for example, the laws governing sale of firearms, very much of that type. Some states have rather permissive laws. Some states have highly restrictive laws. You're not allowed under federal law to go across state lines to buy a handgun to a neighboring state that has a more liberal law. They don't. There's a federal law that prevents that.
This one comes from Congressman Barbara Lee, who's Democrat from California. This came during the debate, and here's what she had to say about the Child Interstate Abortion Notification Bill.
This bill subjects taxi drivers and bus drivers and other transportation professionals to jail time, mind you, jail time, although they had no knowledge of the activity.
Your reaction, Doug?
Well, this is just another ludicrous misconstruction, which was amply rebutted during the debate. That part of the bill that deals with transporting minors across state lines only applies to people who do it knowingly with the intent to evade a state parental notification law and so forth. So that's just silliness. But really, the lawmakers who you've quoted and the groups like Planned Parenthood and NARAL are opposed, in principle, if you will, to the concept that the parent has any right to know anything about it. They want to be able to take these minors, whether they be 17 or 14 or 13 or whatever, and deal with them strictly in the abortion clinics, sell them the abortion, and send them on their way without any type of requirement that the parent be involved in any way. That is their position. They try to divert attention with these silly arguments, but that's what the argument is really about. And we would like to see the Senate now vote on that core issue, when a minor goes across state lines and presents herself before an abortionist in another state, should he have to notify one parent? In most cases, if there are some exceptional cases that are allowed for in the bill, for example, if she's a subject of abuse by the parents, then he would not have to notify the parents, but he would have to notify the appropriate state child abuse agency so that the abuse wouldn't continue. All of that is recognized in the bill. That's what the argument's really about, and we'd like to see the Senate vote on it. When this, the two Missouri senators, I should mention, have been champions of this legislation, and they both signed a letter a couple of weeks ago to the Senate Majority Leader, Bill Frist, urging him to act on this and explicitly supporting the strong provision that's in the House bill that was approved yesterday. Regrettably, the two Illinois senators have been in the forefront of opposing any kind of parental involvement legislation, and indeed it was Senator Durbin who actually blocked the bill from going to conference committee and has delayed it for some time.
Loretta calls from St. Louis. Hi, Loretta.
Yeah, hi. I wondered, why can't we make it mandatory that whoever agrees to perform an abortion, like any type of a Planned Parenthood clinic or whatever, on a minor, they have to sign a legal document that they will be responsible for any medical problems that would a patient would suffer from the abortion. Wouldn't that kind of curb abortion?
Thank you, Loretta. What do you think, Doug?
Well, certainly liability laws ought to and do on their face apply to people who do abortions, malpractice laws. But one of the problems is, and there was a press conference yesterday here in Washington where mothers of a couple of young girls who had been taken out of state for abortions, 13 and 14 years old respectively, taken out of Pennsylvania for abortions in New York in these two cases, as I recall. And in each case, there were rather severe complications, and they couldn't even get anybody in the abortion clinics, at least in one of these cases in New York, to talk to them about it, to give them any information at all about what had occurred. And there was no way to make them because it's in a different state, you see. And that's exactly what why Congress needs to act here, is because individual states are, by and large, powerless to govern what happens in another state. And yet here we have the abortion industry in a systematic way shunting these girls across state lines in order to avoid these laws. And so it's a systematic kind of abuse, and it needs to be dealt with by the only authority that has the constitutional authority to deal with this interstate activity, and that is Congress.
Real quickly, if the Senate fails to take this up before it recesses, what happens?
Well, it's probably dead until the next Congress. There will be a so-called lame duck session after the election, but those sessions tend to be not very productive. So our best chance is really for the Senate to take it up and vote this week, but no later than Saturday, and we hope that's what's done. We encourage anybody who needs more information on this, on what they can do to help, to go to our website at nrlc.org. That's for National Right to Life Committee, nrlc.org, and we have some action items there.
That website address again, folks, nrlc.org. It's a website address for National Right to Life Committee. To stay informed on federal pro-life legislation like the Child Interstate Abortion Notification Act, nrlc.org, I suggest you visit there. Doug Johnson is Legislative Director for National Right to Life. Doug, it's always a pleasure, and thanks for your time.
Thanks for the opportunity, Todd.
Well, we're going to round off today's Issues Etc. talking about religion. Now, religion, of course, is always a subject here on Issues Etc. It's more and more a subject in, I guess you could say, the mainstream media, the media that you watch when you go home. Bill O'Reilly takes it up on occasion, and last night he thought he would give Bill Maher, who has cable television program, Real Time. And if you've seen this thing, it's Bill and usually celebrity guests sitting around on couches talking about issues of the day. They talk about anything. It's a no holds barred, and Bill will have people from all different sides of an issue on there. He's got his own agenda. There's no doubt about that, and I don't fault him for that. But he moderates a conversation that will go just about any place. It's entertaining watching if you can deal with people talking over one another. Well, Bill Maher was asked by CBS, reportedly asked by CBS Evening News to appear on their new Eye to Eye segment, which is where someone comes in and simply makes an editorial comment about a subject of their choosing. Now, according to the reports, when CBS News discovered that he wanted to talk about religion, they nixed it, and they replaced it with something else. Bill O'Reilly thought, hey, that's not fair. Let's give Bill Maher a chance to say what he wanted to say about religion. I'm going to play it for you, and then I want to hear from you. I want your reaction. Now, Issues Etc. is talk radio for the thinking Christian. What you're going to hear will probably upset you. But I do not want any Christian ditto head responses. And if you don't know what I mean by that, let me explain. It's very easy to have a knee-jerk reaction, one that doesn't involve much thought, just a lot of reaction. How would you respond to Bill Maher? He makes some points that are worthy of a response. Rather than dismiss them or dismiss him, I want your reaction to what he has to say about religion by way of a response, a careful, considered, thinking response. Or call in numbers 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. If you were allowed to give a response to Bill Maher on his thoughts on religion, how would you put it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's Bill O'Reilly giving Bill Maher his chance.
I'm going to give you a chance now to tell millions of people all over the world what you wanted to say about religion on CBS. But you only have about 30 seconds. Go.
Well, I probably would have said that I'm only the last in a long line of people to speak out against organized religion and to say that it's dangerous and a mass psychosis. And all you have to do is look around the world from story to story to story to understand that.
Okay.
I mean, why is Iraq falling apart? Why couldn't we get anything done in Iraq? It's because there are two religious sects who are basically at each other's throats because of a succession from the prophet in the 7th century.
That's just how kooky their religion... Okay, that's pretty interesting. So Mother Teresa is a psychotic. That's what I'm
That's
extrapolating
right, Bill. Load the issue with Mother Teresa.
Oh, well,
no, I would never
I
say
that. I believe
this.
She was a religious person. I believe that Catholic charities are in every country in the world, healing the sick and working with the poor.
Can I answer your question?
Sure.
Can I?
Absolutely.
Okay. There's nothing Mother Teresa or charities are doing that they couldn't do without the silliness of religion attached to it. There's no reason why you can't be...
They do it because Christianity says, love your brother, help the poor, this is a philosophy.
And that's a...
Isn't
right.
that great?
And
Isn't
that's
that
a
good? Go ahead.
That is a wonderful sentiment. Jesus as a philosopher is wonderful. There's no greater role model, in my view, than Jesus Christ. It's just a shame that most of the people who follow him and call themselves Christians act nothing like him.
Most of them? Most Christians
are in this country.
Bad?
Well, most Christians don't act Christ-like.
Most?
If they would call themselves Christ-likes instead of Christians, maybe it would remind them to act like Jesus,
right,
which they don't.
Straight. So there's 65 million Catholics in this country. 80% of the population is Christian, 300 million of us. And most of them aren't doing a good job in their Christianity. Is that what you're saying?
Well, most people who are religious in this country are like the cafeteria Catholics. They pick and choose from the religious parts they want to follow. The ones who make the headlines, the evangelical Christians, are usually the ones who are behind everything that represents intolerance and bigotry.
All right, so.
I notice, for example, that they're very often the ones who are hardest on drug use. It's very hard for me to imagine Jesus Christ going up to a medical marijuana sufferer and taking the joint out of his mouth and saying, good luck with your bone marrow cancer, my friend, but that's a very bad
message. Jesus would never do that. You know why? He just cure the guy.
Yeah, I do.
He just cure him. And because he, you know, right away, wouldn't have any use for any medicine. Okay, Mar, now listen.
Well,
you know you're coming across as a bigot, an anti-Christian bigot, because nobody could possibly make a judgment about that many people that they're not good Christians. I'm just pointing out because you and I go back a long way, all right? And I don't think you're a bigot. I don't. But I think you come across as
a bigot.
I think you come across as one. Here's a very specific question. Your fellow traveler in the world of atheism, agnosticism, whatever it may be, is Rosie O'Donnell. On her program, she says, evangelical Christians are just as bad as these fanatical Muslim killers. Do you subscribe to that?
I disagree with that.
Oh, my God.
I disagree with that completely. That's right. Because one reason why the West is superior, in my view, as far as tolerance, is because, yes, we have preachers like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson who, in my view, say crazy things. But nobody takes them that seriously here. In Saudi Arabia, they speak out against homosexuals, and then they chop off their heads. Government sanctioned beheadings in Chop Chop Square in Mecca. Okay, we don't chop off their heads. Certainly not government sanctioned in this country.
Good point.
All right, that's the end of the comments made by Bill Maher on Bill O'Reilly's program last night on Fox News. I'd like your reaction to it, and not just your reaction. Remember before we played the audio, this isn't time for Christian cheerleading. This isn't time for Christian ditto heads. This is time for you, the Issues Etc. audience, to show what I have observed so many times, smartest listeners in radio, and that Issues Etc. is, in fact, talk radio for the thinking Christian. So let's have some thinking responses to Bill Maher's comments on religion. He says religion is, and he's talking about organized religion, he says it's dangerous, it's a mass psychosis. He talked about the silliness of religion. He loves Jesus as a philosopher. But other than that, he thinks most Christians don't act Christ-like. And he says the real difference between radical Islam and Christians in America is that in radical Islam, they listen to the kooks. And Christians in America, I guess their one saving grace is they don't listen to the kooks, like Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson. They don't take them that seriously. Now, if you were given an opportunity to respond to Bill Maher's comments on religion, and this isn't the first time he's made them. I've heard him opine on this at length on other programs, his own program, He was in the news for this about 6 months ago. I've heard him on lengthy interview with Terry Gross of WYLL in Philadelphia. Not WYLL, it's WHYY in Philadelphia, where he's talked at length for 35 minutes with her about his views on religion. And he did a good job of rolling it all into a nutshell there. He's very open. He's very honest. And I think he would probably admit that he's antagonistic toward organized religion. So I'm giving you the opportunity to respond. I don't want to hear what you think about Bill Maher. Really. I want you to respond to his arguments. I say again and again and again that you guys are the smartest listeners in radio. So let's hear some of it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. I know those kind of comments make you angry. I know they raise your blood pressure. I know they irritate you. But how would you respond? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And you can email us here in the studio. Although I'm warning you guys, we've only got a half hour left in the program. You better email early. Sometimes it takes a little time to arrive, even in this electronic age. Issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's go first to David, who calls from his car. David, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello.
Hey, David.
Yeah, I want to make a comment about what Bill Maher said.
Yes.
Well, you know, I'm a Christian, and it's really sad, and, you know, I cry about it sometimes, just to be quite honest, but there's a lot of truth in what Bill Maher has to say about Christians in America. You know, my wife and I, we talk about these type of things on a regular basis, about how Christians really aren't showing the love and acting like Christ. So I think it's sad, but I do think there's some truth to what he has to say.
How would you respond to him characterizing organized religion as dangerous mass psychosis? Those are his words.
Yeah, you know, that's going pretty far. But, you know, once again, there is some truth to that, to a degree.
Even of Christianity, David?
Yes. And I am a Christian saying this. And I think it's a sad thing that there is truth in that. You know, we're not to the level of maybe the, Muslims, you know, that subscribe to the radical Islam. But, you know, we're just not showing love and really following the Bible and having a biblical worldview.
All right,
as
Dave,
we should.
Okay, David. Okay, there's one response. David's response is, well, there's some truth in what he says. And David speaks as a Christian. So Bill Maher calls organized religion, including Christianity, all religions, dangerous mass psychosis, silliness. What do you say? Here's Elise calling from her car. Hi, Elise.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
That's good. I wanted to respond to what he said about the government-sanctioned, you know, religious persecution, I guess you would call it, where they chop off people's hands and things like that.
We've only got about 30 seconds before our break.
Okay. The reason we don't have that in our country is that we founded our country with religious freedom, so we didn't have any church state that was going to dictate the laws based on, you know, whatever they thought was the law.
All right, Elise, hang on the line there. I want to give you a chance to finish your comment when we come back from this break. And for the rest of you, I want to hear from you. How would you respond to Bill Maher? He was on Bill O'Reilly. He said that organized religion is a dangerous mass psychosis. I've heard him say it many times. I want your response, not your reaction. Right after this, more audio open lines.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc. Do you sometimes struggle to find time for personal devotions? What if you could study God's Word while driving your car, doing the dishes, or surfing the web? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for September is called Listening to Luther. It's a CD and a booklet of Luther's small catechism and six hymns written by Martin Luther. You can find out more about Listening to Luther on our website, issuesetc.org, or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. You'll probably recognize the voice of Listening to Luther. It's Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Ken Sherb. Listening to Luther costs $14.99 plus shipping and handling. You'll find a brief, clear study of God's Word on the essentials of the Christian faith with Listening to Luther. This devotional resource costs $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Listening to Luther, 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
The ocean floor, it can't be old. Answers with Ken Ham, author of the children's book, D is for Dinosaur. Ken, is this one of those examples that contradicts the idea that our oceans are billions of years old?
Well, it certainly is. You know, I've often had people ask me questions like, what about all the dating methods that supposedly show the Earth is billions of years old? And I usually respond by saying, well, what about the 90% of methods that contradict the idea that the Earth is billions of years old? See, Mark, most people don't realize the majority of dating methods pose very serious problems for those who accept the secular dates. Consider the seafloor. According to secular scientists, the seafloor is supposed to be 3 billion years old. Now, scientists observe sediment being deposited on the ocean floor, and through various means and accounting for sediment coming in and being removed, they've actually been able to measure the net amount of sediment deposited. And using this amount and extrapolating backwards, there's only enough sediment to account for 12 million years. And that's assuming there was no sediment to start with. But Noah's flood would have added lots of sediment. In fact, this means the ocean floor could be much younger, as young as 6,000 years, just as the Bible indicates.
We have a free booklet we'd like you to read which shows that our Earth is not millions of years old and that a global catastrophe occurred about 4,400 years ago. It makes for some fascinating reading, so look for Ken Ham's booklet when you go to AnswersRadio.com.
We give thanks for the folks at LCMS World Relief because they are the hands and the feet that allow many people to reach out in charity and love to those who are less fortunate than we.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Arthur Just on the importance of LCMS World Relief.
In the Gospels, Jesus says that he came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. And spending out his life for us on the cross is how he served us. Because Christ is in us, and we embody him in his mercy and love, we are to manifest that in our lives. And LCMS World Relief does exactly that. By reaching out with concrete expressions of Christ's love, mercy, and compassion to those who have been broken by storm and tempest, who, for whatever reason, need the kind of love and compassion that is in us because Christ is in us.
For more information or to donate to LCMS World Relief, call them toll-free 1-888-930-4438.
Here's a day trip the entire family can enjoy at the Saxon Lutheran Memorial's 26th Annual Fall Festival, Saturday, October 14th from 9 until 4. It's located just south of Perryville, Missouri, and listed on the Register of National Historic Places. Enjoy arts and crafts, weaving, soap making, cider making, and the festival's famous apple butter cooking, plus musical entertainment and great food. It's the Saxon Lutheran Memorial Fall Festival, October 14th.
Okay, we've got Elise hanging on the line, and before I go back to Elise, I do need to respond to something that the first caller, David, had to say. He said, well, there's a lot of truth in what Bill Maher said, and I pressed him on it, said, what about describing organized religion as dangerous mass psychosis? He said, there's a lot of truth in that. Christians just don't live the way they should. Well, yes, there is a lot of truth in what Bill Maher said about Christians not living the way they should. I think that's kind of the point, isn't it? If you think that Christianity is merely a moral system or that Jesus is the moral example for you to follow, if that's your definition of Christianity, then, of course, you will judge all Christians, each and every one, to be hypocrites, right? And to be acting completely out of concert with their faith. Right? I think the whole point of this is, not to tip my hand too much, because I want to hear from you, Christianity is not a moral system. It cannot be evaluated the same way that you evaluate Islam or Buddhism or any other of the morality religions. Christianity isn't a morality religion. Elise, still on the line. I'm going to let you finish. You were saying that... at least in response to his comment on why we don't have radical Christians in, or that the West is different because we have a freedom of religion. Finish up, if you would.
Well, you know, in American history, when we all came, you know, at the beginning, they were looking at, should they have different states be like, you know, with different denominations. I think of Rhode Island and the Friends and things like that, you know, where they would have their own little state with a church in charge. And we rejected that as a country, saying, no, we're going to have freedom of religion. And because we don't have that church state or state church, we have freedom. That's why we don't have abuses like we see in Muslim countries where they want a Islamic state.
Thank you very much, Elise. I appreciate it. Okay. That explains the difference between Muslim countries and the United States. But how would you respond to Bill Maher's basic contention that organized religion, including Christianity, is dangerous mass psychosis? That's the heart of his critique there. Up next, Shelley calling from her car. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I kind of agree with the first caller who said that, you know, we don't always act like Christ. If we would all act like Christ and walk like Christ, then we wouldn't have the problems that we even have in our country. We wouldn't have the problems we have with government and a lot of other moral issues that we have if we would walk like Christ.
But Shelley,
if
we walk like Christ, we wouldn't need Christ.
That's exactly right. That's why we're a flawed human, and we have to ask for forgiveness of our sins on a daily basis, because every day we commit sin, regardless of whether, you know, we are saved or not. So it makes it almost impossible to have a utopia. It is impossible to have a utopia here on earth and in our countries. But we have to try to walk as closely with Christ as we possibly can on a daily basis.
Shelley, thank you for the call. All right, anybody else? So far, a couple of them are really just agreeing with at least Maher's critique of Christianity. Yeah, Maher's got it right. And now, see, Bill Maher's conclusion is Christians don't act like Christ. Most Christians, he say, do not act Christ-like. Ergo, Christianity is among those organized religions that is a dangerous mass psychosis. Bill Maher doesn't have a problem with following Jesus as a philosopher and a moral teacher. It appears a lot of Christians don't have a problem with it either. Back to the phone. Steve calling from his car. Hi, Steve.
Oh, that was an interesting discussion those two had, wasn't it?
Yes.
A couple of things. First off, is one of the things that Bill Maher have a problem with is a system where there states there's an absolute truth.
All right, explain.
Well, Christianity says there is an absolute truth that God holds accountable to, we're held accountable to by God. We may not like it, but it's held accountable. Could one of his issues with organized religion is there's the presupposition of an absolute truth?
I imagine it could. I mean, that would be a good question to pose to Maher,
right,
and say, now, wait a minute, what are your presuppositions? Is one of your critiques of organized religion that, and by the way, there are other organized religions like Islam that do share at least the belief that there's such a thing as absolute truth.
Now,
is that one of your problems?
Right. Now, hang with me for a moment as I explain. When you have an absolute truth, you're going to be more resolute towards that, or, you know, dogmatic, or whatever you want to do. In his words, psychotic. Now, I also think he's a poor reader of history, because how is that any different from his version of psychotic than what happened in the Cultural Revolution in China, or the killing fields in Cambodia, where you have communists and they're getting people to go out and kill millions? How is that not psychotic?
Well, now there we go. Someone's starting to think. It always takes a little while for the brain cells to start to rub together and get their thing going, but Steve is starting to think. Sounded a little bit like John Warwick Montgomery there for a second, didn't he? Maybe John is rubbing off on Steve. That's part of the reason we have him on so much. But okay, let's just walk back through what Steve said, then we'll go to the next guy. If you're going to judge a system by its results, then let's judge the systems fairly by the results and compare them on an equal footing. If Maher's evidence for Christianity being a dangerous mass psychosis is what the results are every day or in history, then let's judge that against other systems that, that do not believe in God. The Cultural Revolution in China, it's an atheistic, communistic movement. What were its results? That's a good argument to make. I don't know if it's at the heart of the argument, but I think it's a good argument. Thank you very much for thinking it through, Steve. What about the rest of you? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. If you're given an opportunity to respond to Bill Maher when he says that Christianity is a mass psychosis, what would you say? What would you say, Chuck, calling from your car?
Well, actually, when I heard the topic, I decided I'd pray about it, and I asked God, what do I say to Bill Maher? And he said, Bill who?
All right, now that's a low blow.
But, oh, okay, that is.
Yes.
But seriously, I think your previous caller began to put his finger on it when he said, what is the basis upon which Bill Maher makes his judgment? Where does he come from? Does he come from the basis of being part of an organized religion? Does he come from being part of a personal religion which has no organization? What's his basis? What gives him the authority to make such a judgment? Does he do so merely as a casual observer, or does he do so on the basis of research, and does he have facts to back that up, or is he just making some kind of a bald assertion which furthers his own particular mindset, which is contrary to Christianity in the first place? So, all those questions you have to ask.
Now, his example, the one he cited, and again, we've got to remember, he lumps them all together. But the example that Maher cited was Muslims in Iraq. Why can't we get anything going in Iraq? Because we have religious factions who are intent upon killing each other. The Shiites and the Sunnis are just out to kill each other. That's why nothing goes forward. The problem there, another example of religion being a dangerous mass psychosis. So, Chuck, that's the example he cites. Where would you go from there if he says, there's my example? Read about it in the newspaper.
And then he would say that, of course, as your last caller said, not all religion is the same. A religion which is based upon faith in Christ is not a moral system primarily. That's what you said during between the last couple of calls. And if that's the case, then a moral system like that, which has as its absolute that particular good, may indeed be a mass psychosis. But that is to say that all religion is a mass psychosis. I mean, Buddhism certainly is not a religion which would have anything to do with that in whatever form. It is a extremely pacifist religion. So is that a mass psychosis?
Chuck, thank you very much. All right. Let's see what Leslie has to say, listening in Wayne, Michigan. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. I've been enjoying this conversation because I do agree with a lot of what Bill Maher said, but I think one of the main problems is Bill Maher judging Christians on what he sees on TV and reads in the newspaper, or how many Christians has he actually interacted with, and what was their doctrinal background? I think that's where the LCMS Church really takes, front and center because of our strong distinction between law and gospel. And I would love to be able to sit down with him and explain to him the difference between faith and religion and have him meet some of the members of, other Christians and really discuss maybe Luther's small catechism with him so that he can see there is a difference between the people who are on TV who want to, burn, homosexuals, and the people who bomb the abortion clinics. I would like for him to have the opportunity to meet and really get to know people on a one-to-one level so that the gospel could be shared with him.
Leslie, thank you. Now, that's a different approach than the rest of the callers had considered. She's saying, okay, maybe his exposure to Christians in particular has not been representative. Maybe he's judging Christians as a group based upon the poorest of examples. Although I got to say, when I'm listening to Leslie, I got to say to myself, who would I put forward as an example? Who would I introduce Bill Maher to say, here you go. Here's an example of the good side of Christianity. Because if Bill Maher, put his nose to the grindstone or really examined what that person's life and thoughts and deeds were like, he's going to find something wrong there. He will, and he'd be right to do it, right? Who could you possibly introduce him to, straighten him out on what Christianity is all about? I'll give you a hint. I wouldn't introduce him to a Christian. Eric calls from Kansas City. Hi, Eric. Eric. He walked away. Eric, you there? I think he's fading away from us. You can give us a call back, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. This is an email. It comes from Eric in Olathe, Kansas. Maybe it's the same Eric. Maybe he's trying two different means of communication. O'Reilly is right to question Marr's use of the phrase, most Christians don't like act like Christ. It should have been all Christians. Someone else is thinking. Out in Kansas City, or out in Kansas. Seriously, Marr nails the hollowness of the social gospel, writes Eric. In his view, Christianity provides nothing that any other charity could not provide. This is what social gospel looks like. It's indistinguishable, nothing new to offer. Great comment, Eric. Now, see, this is where you got to, when you listen to Marr's comments about Christianity, and his critique of Christianity is that it's hypocritical. People claim to follow Christ, but they don't act like Christ. And he says most Christians don't act Christ-like. You're right, Eric. The response should have been, what do you mean most? All. No Christians act Christ-like. Kind of the point. This is what Don writes. It doesn't surprise me that Bill thinks organized religion is dangerous. He points out fanatical religious Islam as an example. Isn't that true? Yes, it is, Don. As to organized religion being a psychosis, if he means that it's a loss of contact with reality, is that not what we would expect, that the gospel of Christ is foolishness to the unbeliever? Well, yes, or it would appear to be foolishness to the unbeliever. All right, let's follow on with what else Bill has to say. He says the fault, however, is that Marr's comments are based on a false premise that organized religion does not follow what he thinks is important. What does he think is important? PETA. I don't know enough about Marr to know whether that's true or not. The problem is that traditional religion undermines the premise of their own animal rights religion. Animal rights people believe that if the life of a human and that of an animal are of equal worth, the point of view is irreconcilable with the view of the worlds of great religions, all of which accord humans privilege of place. Finally, writes Bill, as you state, Bill's view is based on a false premise that Christianity is a moral religion and therefore, in his eyes, most Christians don't look Christ-like. Christianity, however, is not a morality religion. Christians are saved sinners, saved in Christ. That's Don's email. We still have time for other email. issuesetc@kfuo.org. This one comes from Joel in Dearborn. He writes, the question that is begged is whether or not there is a God and whether he has revealed himself. If so, not everything that is done in his name may be rational. God loving his enemy enough to let his son die for us is not rational. I wouldn't let my son die for someone who stole from me or walked into my house and tried to kill me, but God reveals himself with Christ as having that kind of love, crazy love. Isn't there a song to that effect? Yes. Psychotic God or love beyond our understanding? Hasn't Marr himself ever been in love? Hasn't he ever been so crazy? Writes Joel from Dearborn, Michigan. Wow, that was great. If you want to, let's see, this is Joel's tactic. Bill, if you want to criticize Christians for being psychotic, forget Christians. Let's talk about the God they worship. There's the crazy one. Really crazy. Mike calls from Kansas City. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hey, Todd. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. First, I want to say that I hope more people would consider supporting Issues, et cetera. It's a great program, great topic as well today. I think Don and you already kind of stole my thunder there. You're absolutely correct. I would say, Bill, Christianity, it's not a religion of morality. And to respond to his particular issues, I would say if you look at the greatest mass murders. Mass murderers of our century, Pol Pot, Stalin, Hitler, my gosh, there's dozens of others. They were all secular humanists. They weren't religious by any means. And then also, if you look in America today, look at all of our hospitals, St. Luke's, St. Margaret's, St. Mary's, Menorah Medical Center. I mean, how many hospitals and soup kitchens and other organizations are here in America that are religious-based, and the majority of them Christian religiously based? So I would say to Bill Maher, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Take a good look at these religions. Determine which one truly is following the one true God.
Thank you, Mike. So Mike has marshaled a bunch of arguments there all at once. Kind of, what is Christianity's general influence in civilization been? It's been overwhelmingly positive. And not to generalize. That's a good, maybe that's the first response might be, okay, Bill, let's not overgeneralize. That doesn't get you very far, but at least it kind of says, let's see if we can make some distinctions here. Susanna writes this in Indiana. Maher is correct that Christians often are not Christ-like. However, is that actually more on the sinful unwillingness to speak Christ's rebuking words to those within or outside the faith? This is clearly at odds with the current Western and particularly American cultural value of so-called tolerance. That's pretty smart. What Susanna is saying here is, look, part of the reason Christians do not behave in a Christ-like manner is because the church itself has failed to speak the truth and love to Christians. It's not the truth that's at fault. It's an abandonment of the truth that's at fault. Charles is calling from his car. Hi, Charles.
Hello.
What's your question or comment, Charles?
Oh, my comment. I realize that Christianity isn't necessarily seen as a moral system, but in some regards, if I'm not mistaken, there are a lot of scriptures that would lead you to believe that that's going to be our identification to a world of non-believers by our actions, our deeds. Christ talked about us being a light that's to be, I guess, a light that's not to be kept under a basket, but it's to be put forth for everyone to see its shine. And Paul, a lot of times, I think, discusses how we should be identified by our goodness of deeds and our goodness of heart and our love for one another. So in a sense, though, aren't we still morally obligated to have a certain conduct or code that's going to be, otherwise, people who initially don't believe in Christ, what is going to be their initial attraction to the belief system but our moral conduct?
Charles, thank you for the call. I think I was with him until kind of halfway through there because I think at first he was making the point, look, what do you expect? Are the thoughts and the opinions of Bill Maher outrageous? Are they something that Christians should, golly, I've never heard anyone say that before. Maybe if Christians are really being Christians, really believing what Christians believe and doing what Christians do, maybe we get a lot more comments like Bill Maher's. Maybe the fact that we only hear an occasional Bill Maher say, man, this religion stuff is mass psychosis, indicates the fact that Christians, it's not about Christians living up to a moral code. Christians aren't believing what Christians should believe and speaking it forth clearly. Look, Mormons, if you want to talk about credibility based on living up to a moral code, Mormons got us all beat. Hands down. They're good people. They are. Tim is up next. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I think Bill Maher is pretty much collectively referring to Christians, and you know, all the times we wonder who is a Christian. If you believe in penance, and if you believe in purgatory, and if you believe in praying to Mary, if you believe in Latter-day Saints, if you believe in Jehovah Witnesses, all these people call themselves Christians, you know, and you know, all the people that think that because they go to church that's makes them a Christian, you know, rather than believing Jesus died for their sins. So, you know, I just think that, you know, in Jesus' days, all the religious people in those days, okay, they were all the religious. And I think the Bill Maher at Jesus' time could have possibly said, you religious people collectively, you know, aren't a good representative of God, you know. And
all right. Thank you very much, Tim. What's the time? We're getting short on time. Let's get one more in here real quick. Paul from St. Charles. Paul, welcome.
Hi, Todd. You know, I think part of what Bill said about the psychosis of religion is true, but unfortunately, it's something like this. There's these lumping together of all groups, as if the shaman who worships the tree, as allegedly there's a spirit being contained within it, gets lumped together with the great minds of Christian theism, and that's really a cop-out and a failure to interact and engage meaningful discussion on the subject. And also his point about drugs was really a red herring, because it's reduced to this completely emotional idea of taking a medicinal marijuana out of the hand of a sick and dying person. And I might just ask, what in the world does that have to do with a man down the street?
Yeah, I do not know where he was going with that. That seemed to be him just riding one of his own hobby horses, too. Thank you very much, Charles. Okay, let's see. What can we make of this? I think what we need to do is press toward Jesus here. Because it's very easy for someone to say organized religion, which is a very broad category, is dangerous and a mass psychosis. But the Christian responds to this, I think what they need to do, say if they have the opportunity to respond to Bill Maher, what they need to do is say, okay, let's not deal with Christians. Any statement would be an overgeneralization. If you want to generalize that most Christians aren't Christ-like, let's just admit no Christians are Christ-like. If Christians were Christ-like, they wouldn't need Christ. If we could live the life that Jesus did, we wouldn't need him. Believe it or not, the goal of Christianity is not Christ-likeness, but Christ himself. I think this is what most Christians fail to understand. They think that their job is to go out and try and be like Jesus. No, the goal is Jesus. That's what they call faith, which is very different from a morality. Faith sets its sights and its heart upon its object and not upon emulating its object. Faith doesn't say, boy, I'm going to be like my object. No, faith simply trusts its object. And in this case, we're talking about Jesus. And if you want to deal with Jesus himself, and maybe this is what you do with Maher, you want to deal with Jesus himself, then you're going to deal with the craziest guy who ever walked the face of the earth. Bill Maher says, Jesus as a philosopher is great. He loves Jesus as a philosopher. But we should be quick to point out that you can't deal with Jesus on your terms. You got to deal with him on his terms. Open up those books. See who he claimed to be. What are you going to find? Crazy guy. Absolute nutso crazy person. Believes he's God, and then gives his life thinking he's paying for the sins of the whole world. That is insane. Or, it's true. You can criticize Christians all day long. But the center of the Christian faith isn't Christians or how they behave. The center of the Christian faith is Christ. Well, who would we introduce Maher to show him a good example of Christianity? Golly. We could trounce out Mother... Bill, he tried Mother Teresa. That doesn't work. Who gets better than Mother Teresa? We couldn't show him any Christians, but we could certainly show him the Christ. The one who went to the cross and paid for the sins of people like me, these lousy, hypocritical Christians like me, and like you. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., our interview with televangelist Marilyn Hickey. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line. 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.